to get this centered right. I first want to just personally take a minute, and I want to recognize a dear friend of mine who's here for the first time, and that's Joan Nathan. And Joan is the author of Jewish Cooking in America, which some of you may be familiar with, and many other cookbooks that explore Jewish foodways in the United States and also in Israel. She's a frequent contributor to the New York Times, and she's also host of a PBS series also entitled Jewish Cooking in America. And I just want to say that my work has been heavily influenced by Joan's work, and I'm really indebted to the work that she's done in the field of American Jewish foodways. And as a first-timer, I just wanted to recognize you, Joan, so thank you. Great. And while I'm recognizing people in the audience, I'm going to ask for a show of hands if you're Jewish. Okay, so the next question is, what are you doing here? Okay? And I want to take your names, and I'm sending them to your synagogues right now, okay? No, I'm really glad to have a few, you know, other followers here with me. And we've passed out, does everybody have their little Southern Jewish primer in front of them? Because when I went over my talk, I realized there are quite a few words that some folks that aren't Jewish may not know, but a lot of folks do know because they're already a part of the culture. So you don't have to raise your hand and ask me to stop or anything. You can just look at your little primer. And also, if you have any further questions about kashrut, you should ask Joan Nathan, okay? Because Joan grew up in Rhode Island Jewish, I grew up in Arkansas Jewish, and those experiences are very different. So I'd like to leave all that to Joan. Anyway, there is no stronger test of an observant Jew's true commitment to his or her faith than the aroma that wafts over East Memphis from Corky's barbecue restaurant when the pits are slow roasting pork ribs. Anyone who can resist that aroma, especially anyone raised in the South, either has strong willpower, is a vegetarian from out of state, or is a member of nearby Orthodox congregations, Baron Hirsch or Anshi Sfard Beth El Emeth. Because for as long as barbecue has been eaten in Memphis, the smell and taste of this forbidden meat has plagued Jewish Memphians. Why the dilemma? Because for Memphians, as this group knows, barbecue historically refers to pork, not beef, not chicken, or even black and red fish, but the pure, unadulterated pig, primarily the shoulder cut and the ribs. The taste of Memphis barbecue, the allure of its culture, the cult-like behavior of its followers, and its overwhelming presence throughout the city cause one to consider the irony that such a phenomenon coexists with one of the largest Orthodox congregations in the nation in Memphis. Did a higher power place these Orthodox Jews in Memphis to test their faith? Is Memphis barbecue connected with the fact that one of the nation's largest Reform congregations is also located in the city? Well, in the past, there was little middle ground when it came to Jewish observance in Memphis. Until the first conservative congregation in Memphis was founded in the 1950s, Memphis Jews were either Orthodox or they were Reform. For four generations, Memphis Jews have either embraced or rejected pork barbecue in their food traditions. But times are changing in Memphis, and these changes reveal a Jewish middle ground and a new era of kosher barbecue. For the past 14 years, the world's only kosher barbecue contest has been held in Memphis, sponsored by Orthodox congregation Anshi Sfard Beth El Emeth. An equally significant development is underway at Jewish-owned Corky's. Let me say that again. Jewish-owned Corky's Barbecue Restaurant, one of Memphis's most popular barbecue sites. Owners Barry and Don Peltz, longtime members of Reform Congregation Temple Israel, will soon produce a kosher version of their popular barbecue sauce, which they're already selling about a million bottles of a year of their regular version. John Edgerton discusses Southern barbecue styles in his book, Southern Food, and quotes David Dawson's statement that pit barbecue in Memphis is, quote, that element which binds us into a community. Barbecue is a social cause, something which gives meaning to our existence. It is also a family affair, a church function. And in Memphis and West Tennessee, barbecue sometimes seems to take on the trappings of a state religion. These sentiments towards barbecue and its importance within the community are clearly appreciated by Memphis Jews. They consider whether rejecting pork barbecue excludes them from the overall community. Or worse, does rejection of the city's culinary religion make Memphis Jews sacrilegious? Although the answers to both questions is technically yes, white and black, Jewish and Gentile Southerners understand the significance of religious boundaries. Because Jews in the South have long been respected by their Gentile neighbors as a people of the book, or as Memphian Selma Lewis described them, a biblical people in the Bible Belt, their unusual dietary restrictions have been respected for generations. Black and white Gentiles in Memphis not only acknowledge Jewish dietary practices, but they also support Jewish efforts to maintain kashrut, which are the Jewish dietary laws. In observant Jewish homes throughout the South, African-American domestic workers mastered the Jewish dietary laws, often better than their Jewish employers. Memphian Fanny Kaplan, who I interviewed, recalls a conversation with Maggie McEwen, an African-American domestic worker from Mason, Tennessee, who came to work for a family in the 1940s. Maggie said, "Where do you keep your milk things, your meat things, your parv things?" "Why do you need to know?" asked Kaplan. Maggie said, "This is going to be my kitchen, and I need to know." She had learned kashrut from a previous Jewish employer. Fanny Kaplan recalled Maggie McEwen's horror when Kaplan once attempted to put Crisco into a meat skillet using a milk spoon. This mistake never happened again. When observant Jewish peddlers traveled country roads outside cities like Memphis, farm families did their best to provide foods they could eat. The best option was usually hard-boiled eggs, since even cooked vegetables were flavored with pork. How to respect Jewish dietary laws in a region that consumed not just barbecue, but every speck of the hog three times a day was a challenge. Joe Gray Taylor noted that so long as he had pork, as we all know, the Southerner ate it every day and nearly every meal. North Carolinian Harry Golden tells the story of a Jewish peddler in Perry County, Alabama, who was invited to eat dinner with a farm family. He hungrily consumed the roast pork, black-eyed peas cooked with fatback, and sopped up the remains of the pot liquor with his lard and rich biscuit. The farmer's wife watched in amazement and said to the peddler, "But Mr. Stein, I thought that Moses forbid the children of Israel from eating anything from the pig." "My dear madam," replied Mr. Stein, "if God had spoken to Moses in Perry County, Alabama, he would never have issued such an edict." Well, it's all about place, isn't it? You know, we know it's true. Memphis Jews, like their Gentile neighbors, long for the camaraderie that could only take place near a smoking barbecue pit or at a table laden with a mess of ribs and sides of coleslaw, baked beans, and potato salad. And even more tempting than community was the quest for flavor of true Memphis barbecue. And seeking both taste and community in 1988, the Jews of Anshi Sfard, Beth El Emeth, found it. Melvin Katz has been interested in cooking on grills and smokers since the late 1950s, when he first discovered this method of cooking while in the Army in El Paso, Texas. Katz brought this interest with him back to his native Memphis, where he and his Texas-born wife, Esteline, live today. Longtime members of the Orthodox congregation, they've grown increasingly observant, and today they maintain a kosher home. Melvin's religious beliefs somewhat complicated his interest in barbecuing. His original barrel smoker, constructed by his Texas father-in-law, did not satisfy the laws of kashrut. Today, Melvin's collection of barbecue equipment has expanded, and it includes a fish grill, a fish smoker, a meat grill, a meat smoker, and a smoker exclusively for use at Passover. And these are all out on his deck. It's quite impressive. Because, you know, you can't mix all these things together, and there's lots of complicated stuff. After challenging the superiority of each other's smoked briskets for many years, Melvin Katz and his friend Ira Weinstein decided it was time for a kosher barbecue contest. In the late 1980s, they approached the official at Memphis in May at the barbecue cooking contest, which everyone knows that's the world's largest barbecue contest. But they asked him about sponsoring an event, but the idea just never was approved. The congregants at Anshi Sfard, Beth El Emeth, decided to go it on their own, and in 1988, their first kosher barbecue contest was launched. Now, in a traditional barbecue contest, contestants bring their own customized grills and smokers, secret sauces, spice mixes, and meat purchased from their suppliers. It's a little different in a kosher competition. officers of the Shul agreed to purchase barbecue pits for each team, and these pits remain the property of the Shul for future contests for the synagogue. And I went to this year's kosher barbecue contest, which was this past Sunday, and I went on Saturday night because they can come back in and work, the teams can come back in after sunset, after Shabbos is over on Saturday night. So they're there until late in the night on Saturday night. And while I was there, the different male Shul members start pushing all the grills out from the social hall out into the parking lot. It was this amazing parade with everybody with their yarmulkes on. It was just quite a scene. Each team pays, this gets really complicated because you can imagine in a barbecue contest, it's all about your stuff, your recipes, your equipment, and you basically come with none. Each team pays the shul $100, and then they receive a slab of kosher beef ribs, a kosher brisket, and a certified kosher grill to use for the contest. The team also receives other ingredients that are necessary for their sauces and spice mixes and marinades, which are pre-approved by the shul for being kosher and then purchased by a volunteer at one of the local kosher food purveyors. Contestants are allowed to use the shul kitchen on Thursday prior to the Sunday contest, and then they can come back in after Shabbos on Saturday evening. And when I was there on Sunday, Rabbi Joel Finkelstein, who is their rabbi, a young man, really wonderful guy from Brooklyn, he gave me a copy of the rules they give each team, and I just wanted to share a couple things that he's written here. He says to them, how to cook barbecue is far from me to preach to you since I grew up not far from Brooklyn. But as to the kosher rules, I think I can be of help. And then this is the rest. And basically, he describes the basic rules of kashrut, and then he says, you have to have kosher utensils, it has to be supervised kosher, and then this piece about Jewish cooking. In order for most foods to be kosher, they also need to be at least partially cooked by a Jew. If your team has no Jews, we ask that you ask the rabbi or a Jewish friend to light the fire for you. it's a great thing. That's just my favorite thing. You never know when the rabbi may come by to check on your food. It could have kosher ingredients, be cooked by Jews, have kosher utensils, but if it's not done under the occasional glance of a rabbi, it's not 100%. So that's their rules. Of course, each team has their own special recipe. Melvin Katz's recipe came from Rosie Nider, the African-American wife of Robert Nider, a former employee for the Katz's auto business. Knowing her reputation as a wonderful cook, Katz asked Nider for help. I need to know how to make a good barbecue sauce, he said. That's no problem, said Nider. I can show you. When Nider showed up with Katz at the synagogue on the Thursday night prior to the first contest, Katz's friends accused him of bringing in a ringer. The Nider Katz sauce is a sweet hot sauce flavored with garlic and lemon and sugar. He also makes up a spice rub of black pepper, garlic powder, cayenne, and white vinegar, which he rubs on the meat and then uses as a basting sauce during the smoking process. Today, the contest has grown from 10 to 32 teams, and like the Memphis in May competition, it has its own corporate sponsor and celebrity judges. Kroger Supermarket hosts the contest and supplies all the kosher ingredients, including the meat. And past celebrity judges have included Corky's Barry Peltz, Nick Virgos, who's the son of Charlie Virgos that we saw in the film last night, who founded The Rendezvous. And each team now gets two grills, one for ribs, one for brisket. And the awards are also given for the best team name. I'll share a few team names with you. There's the Holy Smokers, Grillin' and Tefillin', the Three Brisketeers, So Fine, Bovine. And I have to show you one thing, too. They let me have a team member's cap. And I don't know if you can see the logo, but it's a pig crossed out. So it's like, no pigs. You know, it's like Ghostbusters with a pig. Now, Barry Peltz says the most common question he is asked about his involvement in Corky's barbecue restaurant is, what's a nice Jewish boy doing in the barbecue business? Everyone kids around, says Barry, that you either have to be black or Jewish to work at Corky's. Following in the footsteps of his father, Don Peltz, who founded Corky's in 1984, Barry actively develops new products for the company, and he hopes to have their popular barbecue sauce certified kosher and to produce a line of kosher barbecue beef, brisket, and chicken in the near future. And I've already heard they've got a line of kosher smoked turkeys that should be available for this Thanksgiving. Corky's caters many events in the Jewish community, including Temple Israel's annual Hanukkah party and its Brotherhood dinners, which feature barbecue beef brisket and chicken. Providing a kosher product, however, is a much larger challenge. When the restaurant first opened, it was criticized by the Orthodox Jews of Memphis. "The rabbis talked about us in shul," said Peltz. The criticism ceased over time. Fourth generation members at Temple Israel, which is a Reform congregation, the Peltz family contribute to Jewish causes throughout the city, and they also mail their Corky's non-pork mail order barbecue for Jewish functions across the country. When Orthodox leaders at Memphis Hebrew Academy called and asked Corky's to cater their annual kosher fundraising dinner, Barry Peltz and his father Don agreed they would rise to the challenge. "Everybody that is Orthodox here in Memphis can't eat our food," said Barry, "but they hear about it." Catering the fundraising dinner gave the Peltz family an opportunity to share Corky's flavor with the Orthodox community with the assurance that the meal was certified kosher. I mean, this was just like a mitzvah they felt they had to do. This was a good thing. You know, they had to do this. After 3 months of planning with Rabbi Nathan Greenblatt, who oversees the Memphis VOD, which is a local organization of rabbis and Mashiachs. Mashiach is an Orthodox Jew who inspects and makes sure all the laws of kashrut are observed. The Corky's team was ready. They purchased new utensils, they scorched the ovens, they thoroughly cleaned the production kitchens to kosher them for the kosher barbecue. The rabbi met in Olive Branch, Mississippi with Corky's suppliers to ensure that all the ingredients were kosher. "It was the talk of the town," said Barry. "It was the biggest fundraiser they've ever had at the Hebrew Academy. The whole Orthodox community, they went nuts over it." And he also said, "We're never doing it again." It was a tremendous amount of work. Barry Peltz was raised in Memphis, and he frequently ate both his mother's beef brisket and at Leonard's Pit Barbecue. Leonard Huberger is credited with inventing the Memphis pork barbecue sandwich, the one that features pulled or chopped shoulder meat on a bun, flavored with a tomato-based sauce and topped with coleslaw. Leonard's was also a frequent advertiser in the Hebrew Watchman, which was a Jewish newspaper published in Memphis that served the Mid-South Jewish community. The Leonard's ads that I looked at promised the best take-home sandwich pack in Dixie. Come in for a meal you'll really enjoy. The old reliable with the know-how in this nice Jewish paper. And Jewish customers came. They came after Sunday school at Temple Israel. They came on dates and after the movies. Barbecue drew Jews to other popular Memphis drive-ins and restaurants in the 1940s and 1950s. "We'd never go home without going by the Pig and Whistle," said Jack Abraham of Memphis. "My parents knew I was going. They didn't know I was eating barbecue. I'd tell them I had an order of French fried potatoes, I'd forget to mention the barbecue." But Jewish love of Memphis barbecue continues today, and it's particularly strong among Jews who have moved to other regions of the country. Just like the Southern Jews who buy Jewish soul food when they visit cities like New York, Jews who moved away from the South fill their suitcases with Southern soul food when they come home to visit. "I never left Memphis to return to my home in Philadelphia or D.C. without a stopover at Corky's Window or at Cecil's Grocery for ribs and shredded pork," said Dee Dee Eisenberg, who's a Memphian who now lives in Potomac, Maryland. Even Jews who live in Mississippi, a state famous for its own delicious barbecue, view Memphis as the northern capital of Mississippi and frequently visit the city for a taste of its barbecue. During the summer of 2001, Macy Hart, who's a native of Winona, Mississippi, was honored in Jackson, Mississippi for his 30 years of leadership at the camp, Henry S. Jacobs Camp, which is a Jewish camp in Mississippi. And 300 guests attended the event and were, of course, served the South's finest barbecue, chicken and beef from Corky's. And in Blytheville, Arkansas, a small town 75 miles north of Memphis, congregants at Temple Israel come from towns located throughout northeastern Arkansas, southeastern Missouri. The temple was most active in the 1960s and the 1970s, and members often make long drive home after the service on Friday night and after religious school on Sundays. A popular stop before they headed back home was the Dixie Pig. Blytheville's renowned barbecue restaurant. It was founded by the Hossel family in 1923, and the Dixie Pig's specialty is a hickory smoked pork shoulder served chopped on a plate or on a bun with a side of coleslaw. Dixie Pig's chopped barbecue is so beloved that when Blytheville residents die, locals bring a tray of barbecue, sauce, and buns to the home of bereaved relatives and friends. Huddy Cohen, a member of Blytheville's Temple Israel, and my mother, adopted this custom and has delivered many a barbecue shiva meal to her, which is mourning. When you're in shiva, you're in mourning. Has taken this meal to her Protestant friends and neighbors. Although Memphis is the center of barbecue culture for Jewish Southerners, the relationship between Jews and barbecue is certainly not limited to this region. Examples abound throughout the South of Jewish cooks and kosher butchers that have melded Jewish dishes with the cooking methods of barbecue, and Jewish customers devoted to their local barbecue restaurants. In practically every Southern state, Jewish cooks take pride in their regional version of barbecue brisket, which is a favorite dish for Shabbos dinners, synagogue potlucks, and other community functions. And I just wanted to share a couple of stories with you since I focused on Memphis, but I just wanted to tell you a couple of quick Texas stories. Smithsonian folklorist Raina Green, her family makes barbecue matzo balls on their backyard grill in Dallas. And this I couldn't quite believe, but I found Raina and I talked to her about it. The tradition began when Green's grandmother, Clara Frederick, prepared a bunch of softball-sized matzo balls that were too heavy for soup. So she kind of goofed on this recipe. She made really heavy, big matzo balls. And Frederick remembered that the family's pit cooker was already fired up for beef ribs and brisket. She cut the matzo balls in half, placed them on the grill, doused them with a Texas-style barbecue sauce, and a family tradition was born. It's not the traditional way to serve matzo balls. In the 1950s, Joe Lewis and Sons Kosher Meat Market in Houston advertised their kosher pit barbecue with that special sauce. And to encourage sales, they offered a kosher salami along with your barbecue. The Texas Ranger Drive-In in Houston featured the Lewis's kosher steaks, their hot dogs, and barbecue, and announced in May 1950, now, for the first time in Houston, kosher hamburger sandwiches, beef furnished by Joe Lewis and Sons, pioneers of kosher meat in Houston. And another ad soon followed. It's here to stay, the new kosher hamburger sandwich. The overwhelming reception you've given this new sandwich assures us that it's just what the people of Houston wanted for unequaled taste in a hamburger. Try it. It's only 20 cents. And for those who really appreciated the taste of the exotic at the Texas Ranger Drive-In, another ad said, another delicious treat, kosher corned beef sandwich on rye bread with potato salad, 50 cents. Kosher drew both Jewish and Gentile customers in Houston. In an advertisement for their June 1950 annual picnic, the Herzl Lodge of B'nai B'rith in Houston made sure to announce that the kosher barbecue would be served at their dinner. Well, in the early 1980s, Rachel Saltzman collected oral histories for the Center for the Southern Folklore. They did a special project called the Lox and Grits Documentary Project on Jewish Life in Memphis. And it's a great project. And Saltzman suggested, and she quotes here, let me read her quote, Jews who live in Memphis consider themselves as Southern as their Gentile neighbors, but they also regard their community as being as Jewish as any in the Northeast. Her observation is confirmed time and again by individuals within the diverse congregations of the city. While the members of Temple Israel, Baron Hirsch, Beth Sholem, and Anshi Sfard Beth El Emeth do not share the same styles of worship, food, or the social events, they do share a common identity as Southerners and as Jews. Each congregation expresses their identity in ways that speak to the larger Gentile community about their expectations for social acceptance and their experiences of religious observance. Perhaps one of the strongest symbols of Memphis food culture, barbecue also links the Jews of Memphis. Regardless of their level of observance, Memphis Jews have made peace with barbecue, and they've found ways to embrace its distinctive regional taste. Like the old Halpern's Delicatessen motto in Memphis. I don't know if some of y'all remember Halpern's. They had a great sign up in the delicatessens that said, "Say it with food." And so have Southern Jews. Some speak with barbecue, others with kosher brisket, but all share a common culture by bridging their Jewish and their Southern heritage at the table. Thank you.
Yeah, we've got time for a couple or three questions.
Anybody have anything specific?
Comment and a question. There's a film project in New Orleans that we diminished. It's called Shalom Yom, the Southern Jewish Experience. I'm sure it will come into a JCC interviews. And also, I'd like to comment on the legend I've heard that Elvis.
Right. Yeah, he was. He was just. He was just saying two things here. That there's a film that's out called Shalom Y'all, which is by Brian Boehm out of New Orleans, and I'm sure that will be coming around. I think that Brian really looks at food. Also, there's another film I should mention that's been shown here at the center called Delta Jews. And that's by a filmmaker, Mike DeWitt. It came out a couple years ago, and that also addressed issues of food. And then the second question was about the Elvis Presley story. And I mentioned that in your primer. It's number 6 there. And this came out of a reference from Selma Lewis, and it's also in several Elvis histories. In Memphis in the 1950s, Orthodox Rabbi Alfred Fruchter and his wife Jeanette employed Elvis Presley. He was young. He was living right there near them as their Shabbos goy. Presley lived in the apartment below them, and he assisted the Fruchters with their weekend Sabbath chores in exchange for the use of their phonograph and telephone. So a Shabbos goy is a Gentile who will then assist you with turning lights on or these other things that are not allowed by law during, so it's a kind of a great Southern tie.
It's also a theory that Elvis was
Jewish. Right. There's a theory that Elvis was Jewish on his mother's side, and I am not commenting on that. Not even touching that. But he wouldn't. Okay. Anybody else? Well, I thank you so much for your reception.
Someone who has done something wonderful and lasting over a long period of time for food in the South. And this year, as you probably know from reading your program, our recipient is Ella Brennan. Ms. Brennan is unable to be here today, and so I'd like to ask her son, Alex Brennan Martin, please to come forward and he will receive this for her. Ellen. Many of you, I'm sure, know Ella Brennan personally, know her restaurant, Commander's Palace, know the Brennan family's contribution to food in New Orleans and beyond. I had the pleasure of interviewing her once for a story in Travel and Leisure magazine about 10 or 15 years ago, and spent a wonderful afternoon at Commander's Palace visiting with her in the courtyard there where that wonderful big 200-year-old oak tree is, and we sat and had a lovely time. And you know, she's rather businesslike. She doesn't like a lot of little chit-chat and small talk. I mean, she takes care of her business, that's first. And so we went briskly through our interview, and then she, when she was through, she stood up and said, "Are we through?" And of course I said, "Sure, we're through." She said, "Are you coming back to dinner tonight?" Well, I had thought I would. I'd really like to have my wife with me, and we have a guest who's here in town. She said, "By all means, I hope you'll come." I've been instructed by my magazine, and all of you who are freelancers know that you're not supposed to mix business with pleasure in these occasions. So I had firmly in mind that we were going to go and have dinner, and I was getting out of there with a check. I had to get out the door with a check, or else I wouldn't be able to deal with my editor. So we got through with a wonderful dinner that went on for about 3 hours. And she looked at me and she said, "Well, my dear, have you gotten everything that is your pleasure to receive tonight?" And I said, "Yes, everything except a check." And she said, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that." And I said, "But Ms. Brennan, I'm going to be in trouble. If I can't present a check, then how am I going to explain to my editor, this really won't look good at all?" And she said, "That is a problem." She said, "It's your problem, however." "And if you're not a real good forger, you're not going to get away with it." So I turned in an expense account, but I put on there that I took three people to Commander's Palace for dinner, and it cost $15. It's the first time I ever had an expense account bounce on me for being too generous to the other side. Ella Brennan started in 1946 with her, primarily with her brother Owen and Dick, and later John and Dottie. The children of Owen Brennan Sr. started Brennan's Restaurant in downtown New Orleans in the French Quarter. And in 1975, Ella and Dick went over to the Garden District and opened Commander's Palace. And this wonderful woman who learned her cooking at her mother's knee and the knee of the wonderful cook they had in the Brennan house, and who went to France and then to New York to study cooking, and who said she was born in the kitchen, took over Commander's Palace and made it the true flagship of America's restaurants. I think that this is not just my opinion, that Commander's Palace is the best restaurant in New Orleans, which of course which as most of us know means the best in the world. She said in the article, I quoted her in the article I wrote about her, that food in New Orleans is like sex. Everybody's interested. And the last thing she said that I appreciate so much, and that makes her just really an ideal person to receive this award, was she said to me that day, "Getting people with different talents to work together for a harmonious outcome is what a great restaurant is about, what a great orchestra is about, what a great baseball team is about, what a great Southern Foodways Alliance." And so she is one of our founders, one of the 50 founders of this organization. It gives me great pleasure to present to her son this little award, which I'm going to ask him to open now so I can explain about its content.
I never took note of opening a present.
Look at it and show it, and I'll explain what we've got here. This is a portrait by Blair Hobbs, one of our famous artists, Southern artists, who happens also to be John T. Edge's wife. This will be the second of Blair's portraits to hang in New Orleans, the first being that of Leah Chase, who was the first president of the Southern Foodways Alliance. So it's a great pleasure to be able to present this. Thank you very much.
here and my mother isn't. Mom had the second of two back surgeries this last Wednesday. And so she's been a little bit under the weather, and she asked me to pass on to you all that she's disappointed that she can't be here. She was looking forward to coming, but the doctor said probably not a good idea. So my phone rang on Tuesday night before she was going to go into the hospital Wednesday and said, "You'll be in Oxford, Mississippi on Friday at 3:30 p.m. Yes, ma'am. Which is the way things go in our house. But at any rate, this is really a lot of fun for me. Growing up being Ellibert and Son and also being in the restaurant business is a two-edged sword. I mean, I've had the opportunity to really learn from one of the best in the business, and also Mom's extended network of friends and family around the country. And I really do say family. We have, you know, my Uncle Jerry Burns and Pete Krendler, who owned 21 in New York, and the Gotti family out in San Francisco. And there's just thousands of people, literally, that have all been a part of our family. And it's been a food family, it's been a restaurant family, and it's been something that's been a real joy to behold and to be a part of. And so for that, I have been eternally grateful, and I'm glad to be here. But on a personal note, I had to come all the way to Oxford, Mississippi to learn about the best barbecue in Houston. And then I also had to come all the way to Oxford, Mississippi to learn a few new things about my mom. So at any rate, thank you all, and I'll make sure she gets you the best.